When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone. Charles Watts here. Welcome back to Inside Arsenal, where you can see, once again, I'm joined by James Benge, as it is time for Inside Arsenal Extra Time. James wearing a very sporting, like, what? It's a Netherlands top, old school Netherlands top type thing, isn't it? Very nice, mate. Very nice.
Yeah, it's my tribute to Glenn Helder.
Glenn Helder, what a player. What
a Never player. Well, need
actually,
a reason
no,
to...
wasn't what a player. But... Glenn Helder, I tell you what.
The Dutch players you can think of.
No, we've had one or two. Glenn Helder definitely at the top. I tell you what, Glenn Helder, I was at Highbury for when Glenn Helder made his debut, and I thought we'd signed an absolute superstar. He was so good. And I think it was because that was a time when George had taken all the fun out of Arsenal by that point. You know, Anders had gone and everything like that. And then he suddenly we brought in Helder, and it was like, look at this guy. He's rapid. He's direct, and he was great on that debut, and then it all went downhill.
George will fix that for you. Yeah, George will coach that out of you.
It all went downhill from there. But yes, lovely top, mate. How are you doing? You're good?
I am great. The sun is shining. Spring has sprung. And yet, bizarrely, like, there's still Arsenal football to talk about. European football as well. Like, it's strange experience, isn't it? This time a year ago, we'd had a sort of largely similar experience until the end of a big game. And I was sort of thinking about trudging back through the driving rain after that Sporting Europa League game as I sprinted to get to the last tube at Highbury and Islington, which I did, which in many ways was the sweetest moment of the night.
Yes, what a night it was. Journey home, definitely not the best part of the night. Everyone who was at the Emirates on Tuesday night will testify to that. It was horrendous getting home on Tuesday, but thankfully we all went home happy after what was a dramatic and very good win. We will talk about that in today's show, of course. We've got plenty of other stuff to talk about. Ben White signed his new contract earlier today. We'll discuss that. We've got loads and loads of questions that people have sent in. Gareth Southgate's just named his England squad. No Ben White in that again. And he's just announced to the world that Ben White has asked not to be included in the England squad. So we'll discuss some of that as well. But we've got to start on Tuesday night. I know it's a couple of days old now, but I think everyone's still basking in the glory of ending that 14-year wait to get through to the quarterfinals of the Champions. I cannot believe it's been 14. Just saying it, I just keep thinking, how has that happened? How have Arsenal gone on a 14-year run of not getting into the quarterfinals of the Champions League? But they're there now. The run is over. It was a long night. It was a tension-filled night. It was a dramatic night, but it was a winning night in the end. What did you make of it all?
Yeah, it was thrilling. It was proper Champions League football, I felt, at that early knockout stage where, you know, that there is this clash of styles in an old school European way. I mean, style is not a word I would apply to Porto, but actually, and I'm sure we wouldn't be saying this if Arsenal had lost, but there was almost this sort of perverse enjoyment to be taken out of, like, this game that you just do not see in the Premier League anymore. Everyone, you know, every bit of gamesmanship Porto could get in the, out of their system was on the pitch. And I actually quite enjoyed that, sort of in the moment, although it's starting to rile you up. But even like you look back on it and you go, it made for a sort of really fun way to win. You know, Arsenal didn't win pretty. They kind of got into a street fight, a barroom brawl with the ultimate barroom brawlers. They did not insult anyone's family. They simply hit hard and while Porto were trying to hit below the belt and won. And it was a brilliant, one of those zany nights that, that end with you sort of going, going to Arsenal, do you want to comment on the fact that Sergio Conceição said Arteta insulted his mother? That you only get that sort of madness in European football. I wish someone had told me 14 years ago that you'd have to wait this long for a night like that.
I can just imagine what it was almost like in the press room when Conte Sal said that, given it had gone to extra time, it had gone to penalties, everyone's trying to file, everyone's trying to hit deadline, and suddenly Conte Sal walks into the press conference and says, yeah, Arteta insulted my family. You're just like, oh, we really didn't need another story to try and get over before deadline, Sergio. Can you not just keep that till tomorrow, please? But yeah, look, I mean, the Conte Sal stuff, it's just, yeah. I mean, he's got previous with it, hasn't he? I spoke about that yesterday, and Arsenal are absolutely adamant, of course, that Mikel didn't say anything. Arteta's very adamant that he didn't say anything. In terms of the football, though, it was... I think Arsenal are going to learn a lot from that. And I've spoken about that already. And I just look at it and think, if Arsenal had gone there and rolled over Porto 3-0, 4-0, what would they really learn at this stage? For quite a young, inexperienced team, we've never been here in the Champions League before. Arteta as well, young inexperienced manager, who's never been here in the Champions League before, getting through a tie like this against a team like that and the way they did it, I think it's going to really bode well, you know, not just for this season, but potentially for the next couple of seasons, because you look at Arsenal now and you get the sense that this is going to be a regular occurrence now. You know, Arsenal in the Champions League, you would hope so, judging by the squad and the quality of players that they're getting and planning on recruiting as well. So I think they're going to learn an awful lot from passing a test like this, and it was a really good night. I mean, I watched the highlights yesterday, and it actually felt, watching the highlights, it felt like a better game than
I think it was. Yeah,
one that I was watching. Like, I was really surprised at full time when, on the way home, I was watching the sort of highlights package again, the brief that TNT Sports did, and as the full time whistle went, or as the penalty shootouts finished, Ali McCoist was like, "What a tie! What a game! One of the best I've seen in a long time." And I was like, "Really?" And then I watched this sort of extended highlights of it all, and it did feel like a much better tie than what I was kind of experiencing at the time, whether that's due to tension or whatever. Just, but yeah, it felt like a different game on TV almost than it did in the stadium. But what did you sort of think of the quality of it all?
Well, I imagine you and everyone around you were sort of tearing yourselves apart as well, and you can't really enjoy anything like that. It's really interesting because I watched the whole game back for a piece that I then wrote. I think quite often now, and I'm as guilty of this as anyone, we sort of let the data immediately cloud our judgment. So Arsenal ended up with something like 13 shots in 120 minutes, less than one expected goal. And the view was like, oh, Arsenal didn't really click. And it wasn't their best performance. You know, I think to some extent you can only click when your opposition don't allow you to. And Wendell, brilliant. Pepe, Otavio, brilliant. You know, two teams play these games and we all view it through an Arsenal lens. Porto were phenomenal. But also there are all these moments like Pepe, you remember early on Pepe at the back post when Kai Havertz is there to he's flicking that header in off a white cross. Doesn't count. You know, the Ødegaard goal that wasn't. And then there are loads of other little moments, you know, when Jesus comes on as well that maybe don't add up to like this great data set, because some of it is things that just didn't happen. But Arsenal were there or thereabouts. They didn't give up anything at the other end. And the thing that I really was most impressed about, 3 weeks or whenever it was ago in Porto, Porto got under their skin. It didn't really happen this time. Mm-hmm. Did you see the moment where it's just as Declan Rice is sort of, there's a coming, I don't even remember what the coming together was, just before half time in normal time. Rice is sort of a bit riled up by coming together. Jorginho and Ødegaard are coming over going, mate, don't you get a booking? We want you for the quarterfinal. And then Saliba just does what he would do, goes charging forward and is like, I'm standing by my man. And then you see him, you can see him remember, I'm on a yellow card here. And he's just sort of like Homer Simpson into the hedge. He's like, I'm getting out of here. That to me was quite typical of Arsenal. And that I was most impressed by. That is character. And you need that in the Champions League.
Yeah, I'll talk about David Ryan in a minute, but I just wanted to bring up these couple of comments that viewers have got in touch about the game and talking about kind of what we're discussing here. Raphael says, hi, Charles. Good work as always. Quick one. A lot of people mentioned the Porto game as boring, but for me, I think it might have been our best and most telling game of the season. Our players, although had nervy moments, for the best part, they stayed calm, which is what you're talking about there. They stuck to the game plan and showed no sign of weakness when the tie called for penalties. The trauma of being an Arsenal fan truly runs deep, but with this group, I find myself insanely relaxed in big games. I trust them to win, and even when they don't, I trust that they'll be back in that position again. And the next time they will rectify their mistakes. Final thought, if Arteta was to bring home the Prem and Champions League titles, where does he rank amongst the all-time great managers? It's a bit early to even think about that, to be honest. But
fourth.
Yeah, we'll see if he does bring home those trophies or not. But yeah, I mean, I thought it was a good comment. And when he says insanely relaxed in big games, I think that's penalties. A good comment. Because I never felt like Arsenal were going to concede in that game. You know, there's been loads of big European matches where you just think, oh, this is so nerve-wracking. And every time they go forward, you're like, they're going to score. And of course, they can score out. Someone can ping one in from 30 yards or a set piece can end up. But on the whole, I never really felt like Arsenal were going to concede in that game. I just felt they looked very, very strong. And I think I thought that was real, real positive. I thought it was quite interesting. You had two sort of different views here. You had Raphael at the top saying, I think it was one of our best games. And you had Giordo below saying that he's didn't think many people clicked apart from Rice and Odegaard. And he's mentioned that midweek games, we just don't seem to be right. And I was thinking that's not right. I can't really agree with that, because I think of all the Champions League group stages, Arsenal did very, very well, scored loads of goals and won games handsomely. Sheffield United, I suppose, is not technically midweek because it was a Monday, but it's a night game and they've done that. So I'm not sure. I wouldn't really say that, but I just thought it was quite interesting how you get two very different sort of opinions on a game. But you know, on the whole, I thought it was a really good performance for Arsenal. I thought it was a professional performance for Arsenal. And I thought they absolutely deserved to win that game.
This guy.
Big night for him, wasn't it? For David Raya. Absolutely huge night. He's needed it one, I think, since he's arrived. And his sort of coming of age moment. Always played with the shadow of Aaron Ramsdale hanging over him, which is understandable. But, I mean, this was a big, big night for him. No doubt about it, wasn't it? It was huge.
It was phenomenal. I thought we should say... I mean, two things I really want to emphasize. One, that Wendell penalty that he saved, that's going in the side netting.
Like, I didn't think he saved it. It didn't look it. No, it wasn't until I was coming home on the train watching the penalty shootout that I noticed that he'd got his hands to it. And in the stadium, it just, you know, we all just thought he'd hit the post.
Oh, yeah, same. And only when we saw the replays in the press box, you go, and there's the gasp from the press box that the people kind of in those rows in front are like looking around and you're like, no, Raya saved it. But even before then, you know, when we talk about how composed Arsenal were, I thought he really typified that. So, so strong when Porto were hitting those balls into the channel. He'd get out. It wasn't always like, you know, he'd get out, he'd take a touch, he'd pass it on. It was when the time called for it, it was he'd get out and he would boot it very, very deep into the Emirates crowd. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. But, I mean, look, I know that I don't think it's always helpful to distinguish between online supporters and off, you know, Emirates Stadium supporters. But I think there are some parts of that distinction. And I think the Emirates had a really deep love for Aaron Ramsdale because he's the one G'ing them up. I think he's probably as emblematic as anyone of the, you know, the success in the transfer market that Arsenal have had. And I mean, yeah, how can you not like Aaron Ramsdale, the person? But, you know, it's hard, like David Raya's like new stepdad. But, you know, when new stepdad turns up with a brand new PlayStation or two penalty shootout saves, you sort of go, quite like new dad. he is our new daddy now. Yeah, brilliant. And I think for me, this was sort of, we've said for ages now, we think Raya's a better kid. We said it when we arrived. We thought he was a marginal upgrade. Now I think we're seeing the upgrades bigger than we thought. And I think Raya is on course to, it's a long road, but on course to propel himself into the conversation around, you know, high echelon goalkeepers. I think Arsenal have a really, really good goalkeeper now.
Yeah, he just looks a lot more, I think he just looks a lot more calm, doesn't he? He just feels more comfortable, I think. You get that impression since the turn of the year, or not, maybe even to before that, it was beginning to happen. But you can understand why he was probably a little bit nervy early on, can't you? Given the spotlight that was on him, the constant conversation of Ramsdale versus Raya and all that. But that's obviously died down as the season's gone on. And he just feels, or it looks like he feels a lot more comfortable in his own position now. He knows he's number one and he looks comfortable in that. And we're beginning to see the best of him. And yeah, it was a big one. I think every new signing needs a big moment, don't they, when they come to a club. And I think that was certainly his. And like you said, for all the love in the stadium for Aaron Ramsdale, and there is loads of love in the stadium for Aaron Ramsdale, I think the Emirates certainly warmed David Raya now, and a performance like that will absolutely do it. Did you think the goal was the disallowed goal should have been disallowed?
I didn't think it should be overturned. If you know what I mean, you know, it's one of those ones where you go like, oh well, you wouldn't. I think if the referee had given it, I don't think there was any grounds to overturn it. I thought the refereeing performance was weird. More so than like in the first leg, the referee was just like, if you touch something, that's a foul. This one, it sort of randomly oscillated between any contact is a foul. And then he would let things run. I mean, it took six fouls to get a yellow card. Mm-hmm. And Clement Turpin's one of the best referees in Europe, but he just ran the whole game really weirdly. I didn't think it should have been ruled out, but I didn't think the whole VAR, there's that dead grey area in VAR. I don't know, were you the same or?
Well, having watched the replay, no, I don't think it should have been ruled out, but I've watched it for, what's he actually given that for? I couldn't really tell, but yeah, once he was given it, it was never going to get overturned, obviously, on VAR. But I'm glad.
Also, I kind of assume when it involves Pepe that it's Pepe's fault.
How good was Pepe? 41 years old. I kept saying it. I just kept turning to the guy next to me. And I was like, 41. How is he doing this?
So we sort of saw him, like, not spoke to him, just saw him after the match. He was banging into his interviews. I was like, Pepe, you're 7 years older than me, and you've got. I mean, of course, he's in better shape than me, but I couldn't do 12 minutes on a football pitch, and he's done 2 hours. And he was class at the final whistle, applauding Arsenal, applauding the Emirates. I think he loves the wind-up, but, you know, he knows when it starts and when it ends.
There's great pictures doing the rounds today. Have you seen it of when Henri scored against Porto at the Emirates like 18 years ago or whatever it was? And it's Pepe in the background watching it go in. And then there's the exact same picture, but with Trossard's goal scoring. And it's just like hours. The longevity of that guy, honestly, absolutely unbelievable. Fair play to him. I mean, that's some lineup for the quarterfinals, isn't it? Arsenal, yeah. Atletico, Barca, Bayern, Dortmund, City, Paris, and Real Madrid. I mean, that is top tier, elite level European football there, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. That is, you know, not far off. It's quite a way off the best eight teams in Europe, but like it looks like a classic Champions League. You know, if you were writing a film about the Champions League, or you were doing the sort of whatever, these are the people you pick from central casting. It's proper Champions League heritage. It's just missing
basically AC Milan, basically, or Juventus or someone like that. It's a classic, one. Looking at what people have been saying, getting in touch for extra time, says, okay, since we've all been overjoyed by the fact Arsenal made it to the quarterfinals for the first time in 14 years, we should also be wary of the fact that we do struggle against teams that sit deep and back on their defence. If we draw someone like Atletico Madrid, it would be horrendous. On the contrary, I'd be happier to face teams like Bayern or Barca, who love to come forward and play their style. It gives us a chance to play our natural game. Players become more comfortable. Charlie says, two teams I don't want, Manchester City. Premier League versus Premier League is always more difficult and affect the league too. Mm-hmm. And Atletico, because we struggled against Porto's defensive shape and dark arts, Atleti under Simeone are even better than Porto at the dark arts. Would be a mighty struggle to get past them. The other European teams will allow us to open up and play our game more, I think. Now, you watch an awful lot of Champions League football, more than I do, for your job. I did watch the highlights yesterday of Inter Atletico.
Did you think they were very good at defending?
Who?
Atletico.
Well, I only watched the highlights, and I'm going to say no, because Inter had a lot of chances from the highlights, and that's what I wanted to... I mean, Inter, if they had their shooting boots on, win that game fairly comfortably, I think they had plenty of chances. I mean, they got through within a couple of minutes almost, they were through, and then they got the goal going in front. So I look at Atletico at the moment, certainly from the brief amounts of football I've seen of them recently, and I'm not quite sure they are that solid, that, you know, as we've seen of previous Simeone teams as well. I still would rather avoid them, I think, but I don't think they're out and out. It's going to be like the lowest of low blocks, and Arsenal will not be able to find a way through. Here's one from Praditog, I think. How would you say that?
I've got to get Pradip Tog, I think it would be, yeah.
Could you rank the seven Champions League quarterfinal teams in order in which you would like them to be drawn against Arsenal?
Only if you go back to the start, because I wouldn't remember.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. Now, this comment came in just as I was about to ping you over the invite for us to start this. So I have had no time to put this together. So we're going to be doing this off the cuff.
Go first.
We're going to do it off the cuff now.
Right. Are we going from most favourable?
From most favourable, yes. I would say Dortmund. Yeah. You agree?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, Dortmund were... I hope Luke de Jong is going to be having nightmares over that miss yesterday, wouldn't he? To take it to extra time. Given the season de Jong's had as well, you'd back him to score that all day long, but didn't happen. So, yeah. Dortmund. Then who would you go for then?
I think Atletico. Like you said, they're... I mean, everyone of these teams are good teams, and I would worry about Griezmann in his form, and Morata is also much better than we all think he is. And you know, you never know. They might dig out some Atletico moments, but I don't think they are a superstar defensive team.
No, no, I tend to agree with you, but I still kind of want to avoid them. I don't know. It's a toss up between...
Are you thinking Barcelona?
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking Barcelona. Yeah,
but they are quite defensive. I mean, it's more of a sort of, you know, those bits in the Porto game where they just Porto passed the ball around a little aimlessly and it took 10 minutes out of the game. That, I think, is what you would get from Xavi's Barcelona, who play, if it wasn't Xavi coaching it, people would say this is unwatchable football. I mean, they're pretty ordinary. But I think maybe, yeah, I mean, I would have Atleti 7, Barcelona 6, but I don't think you'd be wrong to flip that order.
No, Atleti 6, Barca 5, you mean? Dortmund 7, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah. 6 and 5.
Okay, I'll probably agree with that then. I think just from my very brief experience of watching Atletico Madrid, I'm not convinced they are this watertight defence that Arsenal struggle against as much as a lot of people think, so... I don't know, it's a toss of a coin between there. I mean, I'd also almost put Bayern in there. I mean, Bayern have got the ability to be a very good team. But then I watched Bayern versus Leverkusen, and Leverkusen absolutely destroyed them in that game. But you know, Bayern are Bayern. They have got a lot of good players still, and they have got a certain striker who loves a goal against Arsenal. And they've got history against Arsenal in this competition. Bayern just scares me because it's Bayern.
Bayern had a bad week or a week and a half as well. Bayern have been really good most of the time. I mean, it's a weird sort of really good. But if they were at full strength, I would put Bayern as the team I'd want, the team I'd second on the list of teams I'd least want to face.
Oh, really?
I would have them. Real Madrid don't have much in the way of defenders. PSG, obviously, like, bit worried about this Mbappe lad, but I mean, Ben White, easy. so yeah, I mean, I think Bayern have the higher ceiling of anyone in that competition, other than City.
Okay, all right. Then you do yours in order now. Go through, rattle through yours, and then I'll go through mine.
So after Barcelona, I would have PSG, obviously. The Mbappe factor is a worry, but I think they live up to many a stereotype that people have about the French. They're a little bit weak, and they don't deliver to their potential, and their potential has dipped since the players have gone.
But that stereotype about French
teams, I hate engaging in stereotypes like that.
There is that side to it, but there's also a side that when they click, they are amazing and they destroy someone, and PSG certainly have the ability, well, Mbappe certainly has the ability to take a game away from you like that, doesn't he?
The worry is, yeah, of course, Mbappe would give you sleepless nights, but Arsenal do... I'm almost more worried about the teams that can turn it into, you know, can dominate possession and turn it, you know, match Arsenal at their own game. Whereas I'd be fairly confident that, or that would be one of the better defences I would kind of be looking at to go up against Mbappe, White, Saliba. You can make adjustments and they may all not work. He may just muller you, but you can do things with the players Arsenal have. So I've got PSG.
Right, I'm confused. Let's go back. All right, so your number seven is Dortmund. Number six,
Atleti.
Number five, four,
PSG.
Three,
Real Madrid, because they've got no centre backs, but got that front line scary. Two, Bayern.
One, Man City.
City.
Okay,
can mine I give you my argument for why you want City?
Hold on, let me do mine, then we can. Number, because that's just a completely wrong argument, by the way.
I've got about half an argument.
Whatever you say, it's wrong. Dortmund seven. I'm going Barcelona 6, Atleti 5, Paris Saint-Germain 4, Bayern 3, Madrid 2, Manchester City 1. There you go. Now tell me why you're wrong that Manchester City wouldn't be the worst draw.
If you can beat them over two legs, I think that changes your entire feeling about yourself as a football club. Like how when Liverpool blew that. I think that you... I'm not a... Liverpool expert, neither are you, but I get the feeling, and if I ask Liverpool fans, they might say this, that once they smashed them out of the Champions League, I think that kind of raised Liverpool's esteem a little bit and convinced them that this team can compete. I'd still rather not have to try and do that. You know, that's the point. But that is the argument I would make for, like, why it's not the end of the world. But even as I say that, I'm like, yeah, still just rather just have 90 minutes to see if we could, Arsenal can prove they're better than them.
Okay, well, look, I mean, I think Arsenal already believe they can compete against Manchester City now. I'm not sure they need those two games to do it. And I just think the fact it'll be slap bang in the middle of where the league game is as well, three games against City in a short space of time, I just think would take such a toll on the squad, on the players, on the fans. You avoid that.
Trains.
You avoid, on the trains. You avoid that at all costs, I think. Obviously it'd be brilliant if it goes your way, but yeah, I'd much rather, if we're going to get City, I'd much rather have them when there's not a league game right in the middle of it as well. So that's my reasoning for it. But thank you very much for the question there. I thought that was a good one to answer. Right.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Good news today. Announced, obviously, not much of a secret. We knew it was happening. Tomiyasu's announcement will follow soon as well. But it has been confirmed that Ben White has signed his new contract. I mean, not much more to say about it, really, other than just brilliant news.
Brilliant, brilliant. Just one thing I wanted to say about White, which doesn't get mentioned maybe as much as it ought to, because inherently it's something you take for granted. The guy's never injured. He had that one issue at the back end of... Admittedly, it was quite awkwardly timed at the back end of 21-22. Even then, by the way, he played through it against all medical advice. And yeah. I know it didn't go right, but it made me admire Ben White. He played at the full 46-game championship season, playing every minute for Leeds under Marcelo Bielsa.
Yeah.
Only to say, I think the Arsenal of old had this sort of habit of indulging new contracts on players who, if you had a cold, hard look at them, you would say, we can't trust that you'll be fit to spend several million pounds on you over the years. Who knows what could happen with White? Maybe everyone will say I've jinxed it, but availability is a very important ability, and Ben White has that in spade loads. I like that about him.
Yeah. Yeah. I do. I just think he's a fantastic player. I'm very, very happy that he signed the new deal. I mean, you talk about availability. Obviously, it's a huge important thing for Mikel Arteta. Versatility is as well. Mm-hmm. And he's shown he's versatile. Like you said, he didn't just play and play and play. I mean, he has had injuries, hasn't he? Even this season, he's been struggling with injuries, yet he still manages to play through it. And in the run-up to Christmas, he's come back. He's looked totally different since the break, since Dubai. I mean, he epitomises Arsenal's turnaround in form, really, doesn't he, Ben White? And he's been in such good form recently. And yeah, did you watch the video Arsenal put out of all the other players? You know, how do you talk about Ben White? And, you know, who is Ben White? I thought it was a really good
I didn't know if this was deliberate, but it immediately made me think of it's not The Hideaway, is it? Whatever it is in Love Island, where they go and talk about people behind their back. I was like, they're doing that with Ben White. Maybe it's just because of what's in my head when I think of Ben White. Can I ask you a question? Because we're going to lead into this. Is Ben White the best English right back? Because that is the most competitive category in all world football.
I mean, it is. It's hard, isn't it? How do you sort of compare them when you've got very different right backs in? You've got the unbelievable ability going forward of Trent. You've got the unbelievable ability of tracking back in Kyle Walker and, you know, getting yourself and your team out of a difficult situation with that unbelievable pace. And then you've got just the all-round quality of Ben White and technical ability of Ben White.
He's the one that would give you a bit of everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. But while we're talking about that, then Gareth Southgate is literally just named his England squad, and the press conference is going on as we started recording this. Some quotes are coming out. You see, if you're watching on YouTube, Henry Winter there is part of the press conference with a quote. And we had a call from Edu last week to say that Ben didn't want to be considered. This is what Gareth Southgate's been saying. Sorry. We had a call from Edu last week to say that Ben didn't want to be considered for England squads at this time. It's a great shame. Southgate stresses that there is no issue between White and Steve Holland. Obviously, that was in relation to the story at the World Cup when he left the squad early, and there was reports of a training ground sort of bust up between him and Steve Holland. I got some more sort of further quotes on it, fuller quotes from what Southgate said. So I'm repeating myself a little bit here, but there's a little bit more context to it. It says, we had a call saying Ben didn't want to be considered for England selection at this time. I spoke to him post Qatar, and there was clearly reticence on his side. I don't know why that is, but I have to respect that. The door is 100% open, but he's currently not available to us. There is no issue between us or with Steve Holland. That's been mentioned in articles, and I don't like that. So those are comments from Gareth Southgate about why there is no Ben White in the England squad. And I mean, from Arsenal's point of view, from Mikel Arteta's point of view, and they're not going to be bothered about this in the slightest. And from most Arsenal fans' point of view, they're not going to be bothered about it in the slightest. And to be honest, I'm a big Arsenal fan. I'm a big England fan. I want England to do well, but I'm not overly bothered about it. I think I'm quite happy that Ben White's not going away with England at the moment. I think Ben as well, he's that sort of character where he needs to be enjoying himself. He needs to feel part of it. He needs to feel comfortable. He is a slightly different kind of character. You got that from watching that video with all the players talking about who Ben White is. It's clearly, you know, he's a little bit different to your everyday footballer. And he needs to feel comfortable, and he needs to feel wanted. And maybe that's not happening at England right now, and that's why he's made this decision. But I think from Arsenal's point of view, it's ultimately a good thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And look, you know, I mean, that question we were asking there, it's not the end of the world for England when you've got Kyle Walker in your squad, when you've got so many options. What I would say, though, is that to have a footballer as talented as Ben White and someone who, yeah, like you say, he is a unique character, but he's a character that is universally admired at Arsenal. If he doesn't want to come to England duty, you have to ask yourself questions about why that is and what you can change. Like, I think a lot of people think that Southgate doesn't rate Ben White. Southgate was picking Ben White before he was at Arsenal. People were sort of, I remember him being in the Euro squad and people were like, who? So you can't change what you do as the manager of the England national team to suit Ben White, but you really should say, what can we learn from the fact that Ben White doesn't want to come to this camp, and how can we change it so that he does? Mm-hmm. Because Kyle Walker's 33, Ben White's 26, Trent Alexander-Arnold is too esoteric to play as right back for England. Ben White should be your starting right back, unless Reece James really does come back to his peak. Ben White should be the guy you're thinking about for the 2026 World Cup. And when he's that talented and that versatile, you need to think what the FA and Southgate need to think, what can we do so that you don't get this call from Edu again? Because it's a real failing of England that he's made this call.
Yeah. I mean, it's not just centre-back either. You could play as centre-back for England. Right-back, sorry. You could play centre-back for England. You look at John Stones at the moment, but then you're still mucking around trying to play in Harry Maguire and stuff like that because you've got no real other options at the moment. And then you've got Ben White, who's basically saying, no, I don't want to come play for you because for whatever reason. And ultimately, we don't know the ins and outs of it. It's never really emerged. I don't know if some other people do know the ins and outs of it, but I certainly don't. But just from the sort of outside looking in, you just think, like you said, it's a massive failing on England's part that you've got a player of his quality who just doesn't want to be considered to play for you at the moment. And yeah, it's Southgate's loss, but absolutely Arsenal's gain, and fantastic that he's signed his new deal.
This is even more breaking news. No Tomiyasu in the Japan squad.
Oh, really? Well, hopefully that is a sensible thing, and that's nothing to do with any sort of setback or anything. Did you see the Kevin De Bruyne news today? Minor injury. Minor injury. Definitely going to keep him out of the Arsenal game that on the 31st. Yeah. No chance that he's playing in that game.
Oh, I'd wonder if that like FIFA do sometimes hint, and like the FAs do sometimes hint that they're going to clamp down on that. I do wonder, like, if it's worth doing, because. I mean, Arsenal, certainly England have had their issues with whether they think Arsenal might be doing that, but we all think City may well be. Oh, man.
I'm not sure we can get for a show without your doorbell going.
I am incredibly popular.
You are very, very popular.
And people that want me to sign up to donate to charities, two of them have got me already, so let's hope this is nothing important.
Okay, cool. What were we talking about before that doorbell just rang?
The
injuries. Yeah. Tomiyasu. I mean, that's hopefully that is just a sensible decision that you would think, you know, what did Japan really need him for this international break? Arsenal definitely need him between now and the end of the season. He's just come back. Big games to come. You'd hope they've just got together and thought, you know what, it's best for him to stay here, make sure he's 100% fit for that game against Manchester City. They really want you at that door, mate. They really want you at the door.
Our viewers want us. For at least another 5 minutes. Let's hope he waits.
It's going to be more than 5 minutes because we are just about to move on to questions. Okay, Felix here says, hi, Charles and James. Do you guys see any surprise transfers away from Arsenal this summer? One rumour I heard was Martinelli to PSG. What are your thoughts? I don't see any surprise. I'm just probably putting the death knell on it now, but I think there'll be some fairly big name departures, but I don't think there'll be surprise departures. I think there'll be the ones that people are probably expecting, your Ramsdales, Emil Smith Rowe potentially, Eddie Ketia, Reece Nelson, those type of players. But surprise transfers, as in this sort of big established first team players under Mikel Arteta at the moment, I don't see it this summer. Do you?
I mean, I see why PSG would be thinking we've got an Mbappe shaped hole on the left wing, and they're looking at Rashford as well. I'm sure they are looking at Martinelli. I am certain of it. But I don't, you know, it would test even their financial muscle to get Martinelli out of Arsenal. And I think we've seen why just in the last couple of games, haven't we? It would cost huge money, you know, to get Martinelli
anyone out of this Arsenal team now. You know, one of the starters, the regular starters under Arteta. It's pretty much
all nine figures, aren't they?
Yeah. You look at that. You go through that team, every single one of them. We're talking ridiculous money that only a couple of teams could probably afford. Now, so
that's why they'll have to sign contracts to stay around. There's no one that can buy them off us.
No, absolutely. It's football's like that now, isn't it? Because there's so little money around. I mean, which sounds mad because there's loads of money around, but it's all sort of the same clubs have got that money and that financial clout, and it's very hard to get. Look at Mbappe, you know, he's having to take a big financial hit just compared to what he would have got a couple of years ago because. It's mad, but no, I don't really see any surprise ones. I certainly don't see Arsenal unless PSG, you know, whack £200 million on the table or something like that. I'd I can't see it at all. Here's one from Lloyd. He says, extra time. Hi, Charles. Lloyd of South London here. Considering our increase in goals scored since the Dubai trip, are we now looking in the 50 million number nine department store instead of the 90 million number nine shop? I anticipate hope Edu is scouring Europe's top leagues for strikers with attractive buyout clauses like the ones we triggered for Partey. I don't think the goals change anything. Mikel was speaking the other day, wasn't he? I can't remember.
Was it Mikel or Edu? Mikel,
wasn't it?
Edu has sort of intimated similar as well, that there's the plan.
Oh, no, it was Edu. Yeah, it was Edu before to TNT before one of the Champions League games, wasn't it? Or no, it was before the Newcastle game. That was it. It was the Newcastle Saturday night game. He was on the pitch doing his interview. Yeah, and he said that we've got our plan for the summer. And, you know, that's been kind of set in stone type thing. So, no, I don't think this changes anything. I think still think the targets they wanted then, they still want now.
Not least because some of those targets will be £90 million and some of them will be 50. And I think, you know, when I've spoken to people in around recruitment at big clubs, I think what you really start by doing is working out who the three or four best in a position are, get that. And then you just sort of think, okay, then you need to look at the money after. So depends, like, you know, Isak at 90 million is much better than some strikers who I won't name because it's rude at 50. Did you see Isak's goal on Monday?
Yeah. I want Alexander Isak a lot.
Yeah, there's a reason why he wears that number 14.
I think he would be perfect for this Arsenal. So I was in a pub before the game on Tuesday night talking to someone about this. I met so many viewers and people who watch the channel in the pubs around Arsenal in the build-up to Tuesday night's game. Like, I always meet one or two when I go to the stadium, like either in the stadium or in a pub. But I was up there from like 2:30 basically on Tuesday night on Holloway Road. And we went to a few pubs and I saw so many people coming up watching. So hello to all of you. It was great meeting you all. And it was a lot of fun on Tuesday night. But one of you I was talking to about Alexander Isak and just saying how much I wanted him and just think he'd be absolutely perfect. And yeah, 90 million. Do you think 90 million would get Isak? I've got a feeling Newcastle would want more than that.
Well, no, I don't know what the number would be, but no European football. And they do say they're under pressure to sell players, and a lot of their other players don't really look like they're worth that much money at the moment.
I have a sneaky feeling Bruno might end up at PSG though. He's got release clause, hasn't he, Bruno? He's got 100 million release clause.
If they'd be mad to pay that. He's not that good.
No, he feels like a PSG player to me though. Mm. Okay, Rob says, extra time question or save it for a special transfer session before the end of the season. I did this now because I'll just lose it if I tried to keep it till the end of the season. I'm nowhere near organised enough to keep it all together. Would below realistic player sales plus buys be optimal, and what would your choices be for those positions? Striker, sell Nketiah, buy Sesko, big, strong, fast with a good record, different type than we have today. Winger, sell Reese, buy Nico Williams, quick, versatile and takes people one-on-one, need to rotate more during the season. Midfield, sell Partey and Elneny, release, buy Zubimendi, playmaking six who can learn from and rotate with Georgie for a season. All of them have release clauses that are affordable. Further sales of Ramsdale, Lokonga, Tavares, Tierney, maybe even ESR. Unfortunately, we'd barely have to spend any net money. Then maybe a luxury buy beside a backup goalkeeper would be a decent quality defender like Diamande or Hatto. Best regards, lifelong Arsenal fan, Rob. Thank you very much for your question.
Give him the job.
Rob. I know, I was going to tell you, there's a sporting director right there reading that, isn't he? He's got a way with words. Makes it look very, very easy as well.
I do a sort of Champions League players to watch column before most game weeks, and I did Sesko before Real Madrid second leg. I really like him. Like, shaped like a Haaland, tall, strong. I mean, he's obviously, those comparisons obviously come up. He doesn't score that many yet. I wouldn't have him over, you know, just been thinking over Isak. I wouldn't have him over Isak, but if that one isn't an option, I'm Sesko curious. I think everything he said there is not only sensible, I think it's a realistic approximation of what Arsenal would expect to happen, with the caveat I don't know who the first choice striker is or whether Nico Williams is the winger they'd go for. I mean,
he's an interesting one, Nico Williams, isn't he? He's an interesting one. I do like Nico Williams from what I've seen of him. I do look at him and think, oh, he's got a lot about him. I think he could be a very, very good player at Arsenal.
You'd have to pay the release clause.
Yeah, but it's not that big a release clause, is it? Again, it's like it's like 40, 50 million, isn't it? It's nothing huge.
Right, I had a No, it's not at all. The only thing I know him from is a Chelsea fan that tried to troll me by being sort of like, oh, Chelsea are going to beat you to Osimhen, Diamande and Williams.
43 and million. Like,
that's not a win for you as a Chelsea fan. A win for you as a Chelsea fan should be 3 points, especially against Arsenal. Like, yeah, I mean, he sounds like there is a lot of competition though for Williams because Chelsea are on that case as well. But if he's sensible, he would pick the team that is well run.
Yeah, 43 million. I mean, it's in today's world, 43 million is not a lot. And Zubimendi, again, got a very attractive release clause as well. So, yeah, I wouldn't, you know, Rob, I think in response to that, I think you wouldn't be far off if in terms of what Arsenal are looking at. It'll be interesting to see how it all pans out. We haven't got another transfer one here. This was an interesting one. Sam Craig says, hi, Charles and James. Love the show. Was having an interesting pre-match Tollington debate. I bet the Tolly was Rams. See, I didn't go to the Tolly on Tuesday night. We were like, two Rams to go down there. Was having an interesting pre-match Tolly debate. Interested to get your thoughts. Is Saliba already in an all-time Emirates era 11? For me, Saliba and Touré make up the centre-back. See, I wouldn't have Touré in it because Touré's Highbury.
Highbury.
Yeah, he was there at the Emirates, obviously. I remember him scoring against Liverpool in the first season at the Emirates, but his best days were certainly Highbury for me. And so I wouldn't really consider Touré for an Emirates 11. I mean, Koscielny
I wonder if you take it back. Is Kolo Touré better than you expected when he was playing at the Emirates? But it's just at Highbury, he was just the ultimate shock of the new. Like, who is this guy and how much did he cost? Like, but yeah, exactly like you were about to say before I rudely interrupted you, Koscielny and Mertesacker would be up there. And no one else?
Gabriel.
Oh, Gabriel, yeah.
I honestly think already, I think it's hard not to say Gabriel and Saliba are the two best centre-backs Arsenal have had in the Emirates era. And I think Mertesacker was great. I think Koscielny was great and he did it over a long period of time. But I'm still not sure either of those two are as good as Gabriel and Saliba. Even though they've only been doing it for a couple of years.
Yeah, I think in terms of quality, you're absolutely right. I mean, Mertesacker and Koscielny did it for a very long time. So if you factor that into your calculations, then I would put them ahead. I think in sort of terms of sheer excellence and sort of where they ranked in their position in the Premier League and beyond, like this is really, really special. And they need their view of like an Arsenal's view of who they should be compared to historically it needs to be with the great Arsenal centre back pairings. And if you could keep them together for 6-7 years, we'd be talking about them alongside Adams and Bold, wouldn't we?
Exactly. And that's no disrespect to Mertesacker and Koscielny, but yeah, the way they've started and the quality they're showing, like you said, they need to be compared to the great partnerships, not Koscielny, Mertesacker, even though they were good, they weren't great. And these two have the ability to be up there with the greats when it comes to a centre-back. So I think this is the last one now from P Sharp. I wonder if that's Pat Sharp.
Pat Sharp.
Do you remember Pat Sharp? Do you remember Funhouse or is that way before your time?
I'm dimly aware of it. Is this the Aussie guy?
Pat Sharp. I don't know if he's Aussie or not.
I'm thinking of Pat Cash.
Pat Cash. Yeah.
Pat Sharp. No, I do know
not Pat Cash. Pat Sharp is definitely not Pat Cash.
Pat Rafter as well.
Pat Sharp was a children's TV presenter, and Funhouse was a game. It was a show on ITV that involved the wicked sort of ended with a go kart race, and it was it was way before your time, but it was a lot of fun. Good. Right, extra time. One of the key words, I still can't believe you said Pat Sharp and Pat Cash. That's really funny. One of the key words Arteta keeps saying is availability, isn't it? And the importance of having players available. And it really does feel like we're so close to getting that for the final part of the season. Having more options for getting a goal or even better options for seeing a game out. How much of a mental boost for the whole squad would that be, do you guys think? I mean, massive. You compare where Arsenal are now. I mean, I don't want to curse it. I don't want to. Especially when they're all going away for an international break. But if everyone comes back who are fit now, everyone comes back fit from the international break, and you compare that to last season going down the stretch, it's just the options and the Arteta's got available to him, it's just night and day compared to last season, isn't it? We're having everyone fit. It'll be a massive, massive boost to go into this stretch, basically with a fully fit squad.
Yeah, it was nowhere near fully fit. We always think about Saliba and Tomiyasu, but Partey was in and out and in and out. And I know that Jesus, I mean, I have to say one thing I would say, he looked quite good on Tuesday night. And a lot of these players are going to be sat with their feet up. We think we're pretty certain Martinelli's going to be absolutely fine. So come the end of the international break, Arteta may well have, touch wood, a pretty much fully fit squad, and Timber will be approaching availability, perhaps even, you know, in position to be on the bench. So that is what you dream of. That's what City had last season when they went on that explosive run. And of course it helped because they could do all sorts of rotations within that. And Arsenal just had to flog bodies. My question for Arteta would be how he makes sure he doesn't do that, because you felt it a bit against Porto, but the best way to be able to do that is just to have everyone fit.
I do feel like against Porto, he didn't make many subs because he had penalties in mind. I think he knew who he wanted to take the penalties, and he did not want to take off, say, a Havertz and bring on, I don't know, an Emil or someone like that, and suddenly you haven't got Havertz taking a penalty in that situation. I think he had his penalty takers in mind and he wanted them on the pitch, especially after, you know, he took Jorginho off, so that's one already gone.
Very briefly, because you know this is my favourite thing to talk about, the first three penalties. He had four people on the pitch who'd taken penalty kicks for Arsenal and Declan Rice. The fact that he's let the players kind of run amok with who takes penalties and let anyone have a go, I think that paid dividends on Tuesday night, because all of them stepped up being like, done this before, we know what we're doing. I mean, Arteta said the same thing when I asked him, which was a complete like momentum killer in the press conference. But it was the question I wanted answered, so it got asked.
Fair play. Got to ask your question, mate. Got to ask your question.
Got to get it in. Thank you, Dan, for letting me. If you watch, mate.
Right, that's it. I think we're done. We're out of questions. I think that's it for today. Thank you very much for your time, as always. James, what are you up to during this international break? You going to anything? You just getting ready, sitting back and waiting for the big one?
Well, I go to England-Belgium, which I'm quite looking forward to. But yeah, God knows what we're going to talk about next week as well, because the games won't even have started. But we'll make it work.
I've got like over two weeks of shows to fill now, daily shows to fill, with very little to actually talk about. But every day I always think, oh, what am I going to talk about tomorrow? And then something happens. It's just Arsenal. There's always something to talk about when it comes to Arsenal. And anyway, it's a good time to recharge the batteries. I saw Odegaard talking after the game on Tuesday night, and he was like, I'm knackered, I'm so tired and stuff. So you kind of hope, you know, they've put an awful lot in from starting up after Dubai to this, you know, that winning run. It must have drained an awful lot out of them. So it's probably come at a good time just to have a little bit of a breather, recharge the batteries, and then all focus on the Etihad on March the 31st. Right. All right, everyone. Thank you very much for watching. Appreciate your time. As always, I'll be back tomorrow to do the usual daily show. You want to get involved in that? You want to ask anything? Then do the usual. Reply in the comments below. But until then, have a very good day. Thank you, James. Have a good one, mate.
Have a good one. See you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.